The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. He is back from purgatory. He has healed his wounds. Guys, Chaz, I'm going to tell you, when you called at the end of the last episode, man, you sounded rough, bro.
Telling you, man, you know, life is good and filming and fishing has been good.
Too much going on, you know?
Well, you know, you and I both, it's a combination of the guiding. I'm finishing up and God bless my students, but you know, it's the online learning thing is just, it's a challenge for all of us teachers and shout out to the teachers out there for, you know, cause you got your, you know, all your regular lesson plans for, you know, you're seeing people in person and all of a sudden everything flips and you're remote. Everything changes. Yeah. And it's just it's just been brutal.
It's a different world, man.
It is. But hey, here's the good news, Stephen. We got 1 week left. And I'm praying to God that, and I know we're going to talk about Canada, but I'm praying to God that everything goes back to normal, including, I hate even to say this, but I hope that the school year's like just goes back to normal, you know, that in August, September, we can actually just reconvene and that would be awesome. So anyway, I'll leave it at that. So yeah, things have been kind of crazy lately, but here we are.
You know, for everybody listening out there, Chaz is a hard working dude. You teach high school physics, correct? Chemistry and physics?
Yeah, mostly chemistry. Chemistry, biophysics, actually forensic science. Forensic science is really cool.
Absolutely. I don't know anything about it other than what I've seen on the show Forensic Files. But other than that,
and some of that's actually really cool and up to date. Some of it's kind of Hollywood dramatized, but it all is kind of real and it's pretty sweet, man.
It's all impressive to me. I only have a third grade education. I am from West. they actually give you a graduation cap at third grade in West Virginia, where I'm from.
And then you just go off and start working. Yeah,
young
is
man.
That where you started with the radish company or
that's,
what?
Listen, Thompson Family Radishes represent, folks. That's my main sponsor here. I don't take many sponsors, but Thompson Family Radishes. I will be sure to turn out those Instagram live videos for you guys here shortly.
They've had us covered.
Those radishes. No, Chaz is joking because I'm not the sponsory type, but I said, well, I'd take a family farm radish company, I guess. If you can't tell, we're already into the Pepsis here, folks. You're in trouble. But in West Virginia.
Can't wait to see the thumbnail for this one.
Not 9 years old, they give you a hat and say, go to the mines, you know. That boy can read and write his own name. He's good to work.
Dude, hey, one of my favorite tangent here, and I actually show this movie every year in my remedial physics class. So
is Deliverance.
Remedial physics boys. No, it's called October Sky.
Oh yeah,
have you ever seen October Sky? Old classic movie about rocketry and physics and going to the mines.
You know, little known factoid. If you want to talk rocketry. Wernher von Braun, you know
what? How, dude? Come on now. Okay. See, you folks out there listening, just FYI, Stephen Paul's way smarter than he in his third grade diploma give off. Jesus Christ,
me smart good. the lake I got on, right? Wernher von Braun spent time there because the first. We don't get a lot of Japanese tourists because Melton Hill, where I guide, is where they enriched the original plutonium for the first two atomic bombs.
What? Really?
So the reactor sits right in the lake. So there's the original nuclear reactor right there. And then like Von Braun came to that area. And so there's like all this weird like German stuff going on there. Like when they brought I'm literally laughing about the thumbnail, right? Because they brought all these Nazi rocket scientists back there. So the thumbnail is not going to be Nazi muskies, I promise you. But
that would be bad.
But they brought all those scientists there. And then what's crazy is, like, Von Braun, you said that. Like, so this guy stops at this lake. He's hanging out. Einstein's been there. They ship all that stuff from Oak Ridge, Tennessee to Los Alamos, right? And then Wernher von Braun is, like, doing video clips with Walt Disney. Look it up, dude. Wernher, he's literally, like, during the space race, here's this dude that's just, like, straight-up German rocket scientist that was responsible for that V2 rocket. Anyway, I am way off topic right now, and I need to shut up.
Cool stuff, but yeah, let's
yeah. Yeah, this could go bad real
let's
quick.
Let's talk about musky rockets.
Let's talk about musky rockets. Sorry I haven't talked to Chaz all day, folks. As you know, I'm playing catch-up on the phone. But anyway, man, so you sent me
What do we got? We got some good questions today.
Good questions, but I want to ask you. You sent me a pretty kick-ass picture the other day of a score you had out walleye fishing.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm not sure. Well, we've had a couple. I was on a off the path, actually, carry-in lake for bass, mm-hmm. actually. And so Steph and I went out there, and actually it was kind of funny. Steph wanted to plan a picnic. I'm like, okay, ooh. Well, I got a lake in mind, you know. And
very
course,
romantic.
You know, my romantic mind is saying I got a great spot for a picnic, but she's sleeping right now, so I don't think she can hear me. It's a great spot for a picnic, but it's I think it's got some huge bass. That's in the back of my mind. So we launched the little rowboat, and we got the lunch packed, and all of a sudden, I mean, we're deep in the national forest, and the flies, like, there's like a new hatch of flies. Oh man, shit gets real, and it's like, and I'm fine. But and she was holding her own, but like, and they were actually, like, legitimately bad. They weren't biting, but it was like in your underneath your glasses, in your ears, in your nose, like, you're breathing them in, like, I'm spitting them out. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's legit, like, it's not good. But anyway, my third cast of that trip, I caught a 21 inch largemouth. And I'm like, holy Schmidt. Holy Schmidt, man. Like, for northern Wisconsin, anywhere. Oh man. And then, you know, and it didn't really end after that. I caught one other, like, legit 20, and there were some other ones that were not as big, but they were decent size. So that was, maybe that was the trip you're talking about. Like, that was my last, holy crap trip that, you know, wasn't a musky trip, but it was fun, you know? So now, you caught a really big one on a top rater, right?
No.
Or tell us the story. No. Was it a client?
No.
Client caught fish,
no.
Right?
It was a hand. Yeah, I sent that to Joe, and then everybody in the world found out about that fish. I had a really good day.
Folks about it.
It was a good day. It was one of those days that I remember, like, when I picked the clients up from their hotel, I told him, I said, listen, this looks bad. It was like, there's a teachable moment here because, like, dead
fly. Were you looking at the podcast or are you looking at the weather?
No, I'm talking, like, for podcast listeners, because the weather sucked.
Said this looked bad.
It looked bad because the weather was awful. It was like dead flat calm, high bright sun. I got burnt to a crisp. There's no wind. There's no clouds. There's nothing. And a lot of guys would have gave up, right? But here it comes. We finally hit that low light period. I chased the thermal. Actually, me and you talked about that last time we were on the phone. You go, I know you're chasing thermal this time of year. And I was like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And went out, and I as the sun started to wane, we banged a nice 47 inch fish. I was like, I can't. I even told the client, I said, well, I pulled this one out of my ass. You know,
it's awesome, just like, man.
And that
and
was
sometimes like, sometimes right. you say it and sometimes right, you don't, right. and you're like,
yeah. And I'd warned them. I'm cool with everybody. I say, I'll tell people straight out, be like, this sucks. And they're like, what? And I'm like, no, this sucks.
Well, I do like to be real with them.
Right.
Like,
and
yeah,
be real.
Be real
and so I was just telling them, like, we're going to try our best, but, you know, 47 inch, we were just like high fiving the whole bit. And that was on the old Chaz Martin 700 Goldie locks.
That's one of my faves, dude.
God, that collar. And I wish I won't even say it, because, you know, the difference in more red versus what everybody else has. But anyway, add some red to that bait, folks, if you guys are listening. But we'll talk about that later. But we banged a 47, and then we're coming down to sundown, and it just had that glass look to things. And I said, guys, I said, I want you to put on, I had one dude on a 6-inch Phantom, had the other dude still on the 700. I said, I'm going to throw a top raider, and I whipped out the old mouse. Remember mouse color?
Oh, yes.
So, like, I've got baits Joe doesn't have. Like, the only color I don't have, Chaz, is the gold shiner, which is gold with a green belly. That's the only
weird one. I don't even know that I've ever seen that.
And so I whip out the old mouse color, and I was like, why? No reason. That looks stupid. I'm going to throw it. And the guy was like laughing at me. He said, that's the dumbest bait I've ever seen. And to be honest, I wasn't paying any attention. I was just sort of there and banged a monster, man. Banged a monster. You know, I saw hump up behind it, and it bumped pretty good. I'll say that much. So,
man, it sounds good to hear that, man, because, you know, with opening weekend coming in a few days here in northern Wisconsin, I'm hoping to see a little top water action, but it's good to know that muskies are still chasing.
I'll say
stuff.
This.
We got cold water here, man.
You got cold water. And guys, for listening that are listening out there, it'll come out the day after the podcast. I just did a article on alternative cold water top water presentations. Mm-hmm. So, like, and Chaz, you'll know what I'm talking about of like, when I'm in the super, super shallows, I'm talking 3 feet to zero, right? That what we run into during this early part of the season is that the fish are shallow, but the baits that we're throwing, whether it be a rattle trap or it be a booger tail or whether it be any kind of bucktail or anything, you have to keep it going at a certain speed to get enough lift to keep it off the bottom. So
otherwise you're going to snag up.
And as you know, there's alternative topwater presentations, like slow topwater presentations you can do. So if you're in that northern zone, check that out. Chaz, you just put out a sweet new article. I love it. The dark side. I mean, come on, dude. Come on. If we weren't nerdy enough, folks, more Star Wars references from the idiots here at the podcast. But anyway, we've got a crap ton of questions. Me and you talked for way too long before we even started recording. I'm on
we got to catch up a little bit.
My wife bought me my fourth Pepsi clear of the evening. But first, above all else, you know what it's time for. We had a contest for who could give us the best guru word of wisdom.
Hey, and I gotta, you know, you and I both gotta hand it to the Muskie 360 community. I mean, holy cow, did we know
over 300 submissions.
I mean, that's crazy. Thank you to everybody. Believe me, Steven sent me just a gazillion of them, and they're all crazy and hilarious.
Some of you guys are filthy. Yeah, I was going to say that.
Which one won, man?
The one that won, we're going to play here in a minute. But I got to tell you, some of you guys are perverts out there. Me and Chaz appreciate it. We're going to cheers to that. But this is a somewhat family-friendly show.
Some of those are like French onion soup and Mountain Dew combos.
Absolutely.
You guys are
naughty, naughty boys. But we appreciate them. But here is the winner.
I can't wait.
The guru says you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning.
Oh, my God. What do you think, Chaz? If you're going to drink all day, you got to start in the morning, baby.
You know, I have to say, in my younger college days, that's always been a motto of mine. And I graduated with a decent GPA, and there was some truth to it.
I tell the guru all the time about GPAs. I say D equals diploma, baby. Nobody's checking that stuff.
Well, they always say C's get degrees, so do D's.
One thing I did want to bring up before we go to the first question is because we get a lot of questions here at the app about this. So as of 8 hours ago, this is between a bunch of networks, whether it be CNN, Fox News, even Al Jazeera, NPR, the whole bit. So the U.S.-Canadian border is to remain closed through June 21st. U.S. officials concede that the current restrictions at both Mexican and Canadian borders are likely to be extended. Canada and the United States have agreed to extend a ban on non-essential travel between the two nations by another 30 days as a part to fight against the coronavirus. And that was announced by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. And essentially at this point, we get a lot of people asking what our thoughts on Canada are is this. So we can all agree, we know with beyond a shadow of a doubt, if you had a trip planned for pike or walleye before June 21st, that's not going to happen. We'll sort of keep on top of this and try to give you a clear answer.
I have to say, you know, Joe and I have our annual July 4th trip. We usually like, We head up after July 4th each year, and I got to tell you, Stephen, I am keeping my fingers crossed. I am remaining personally optimistic here that we are able to go. If we don't, I understand, and we have to keep the good of the public health in mind.
Absolutely,
and I get it.
It is what it is.
Well, yeah, people in Kenora, their number of cases up there is very low. And they don't want to increase
their odds,
which makes sense.
I mean, we're just going to have to take it on the chin. I've been going to Canada I'm 38, so it's been 28 years straight. And, you know, if this is the one year that I don't go, I don't go. You know, make the best of it.
Well, but you could go in August. Like, I mean, you and Joe usually hook up in August, you know, and I'm usually back kind of teaching and stuff. So, I mean, I don't know that I'm going to be able to go in July like I usually do. But I'm optimistic. I think if things continue to settle down as they kind of are, maybe we'll see a little bit of a change in that prediction. I'm going to be optimistic.
We'll try to keep you guys updated and just from reputable sources there. But that is from the Canadian government. June 21st is your thing. Let's get to the user questions. I will say this.
Awesome.
Hey, listen, me and Chaz are going to do the trolling podcast. We're just assholes and we're really busy right now, so anyway,
and there's a lot of great questions
First one is up is from Brian says, after heavy rainstorms the water seems to turn to chocolate milk. Where do the muskies go? Are they still catchable? Are they hanging tight to the bottom waiting for cleaner water? What should they do in a stained water situation? Let them have it, dude. What do you think?
Well, first thing I do when I get heavy rain and you get some, clarity issues and things get all chocolatey, the first thing I do is I go to neck downs. And even generally speaking, neck downs are not, at least where I'm fishing in northern Wisconsin, they don't get very chocolatey they don't get all nasty with color. The neck downs provide just so much current. When they open the dams on my flowages where I fish here, that is just a muskie magnet. Muskies that are suspended for, let's just call it midsummer here in my hypothetical scenario. Muskies that are suspended, they zip on in and they just gravitate toward those current areas, whether it be, channels, thoroughfares, you name it. That's what I'm going to do in a heavy rain. I do think there's something to be said, and I'll end it with this, Stephen, and I want to turn it over to you.
Yeah.
There's a spot that Joe and I fish in Canada called Shitty Bay, which I believe Old Spence is.
Old Spence Beach. That sounds like a Spence Petros kind of spot. Yeah,
it is. And Joe and I always go in there, and we've caught some nice muskies in there. Usually, the water in Shitty Bay is shitty. It's turbid. It's nasty. It's full of like that clay. Nasty water. But those muskies are in there. And I guess I'm just going to end with this, that if the bait is there, if the prey is there in those areas, then I think it's worth a check. But generally speaking, Joe and I, and I'll take it on learning from Joe on this one, we have veered away from cloudy water. We generally tend to avoid it.
If you can't, though, I mean, some of these reservoirs I deal with in the south and just if you have bad weather situations anywhere,
You can't avoid it, you gotta do it.
Yeah, as my grandfather used to say, they ain't in the woods. They didn't say, hey boys, this lake is just too cloudy. Let's go up here and hang out in the woods until this looks better. So they're in there.
And they gotta eat.
They gotta eat. So at some point, what I look for in this, if I have heavy rains and there's any kind of current in the place, I'm looking for seams, right? I'm looking for transitional things. I'm looking for, are the shallows chocolate milk, but the bay a little bit outside of that is Nesquik. If there is a color change, I'm looking for color changes. I'm looking for seams.
Ooh, that's cool.
If the entire thing is just the entire lake is just bleh, the whole thing's chocolate milk, I'm going to troll, and I'm going to troll chartreuse slop masters or chartreuse, anything I can get, and just troll nasty stuff. But, you know, they're not, the muskies are not going to hang out and wait for the water to clear up. They're completely adaptable.
Well, right. It's exactly, man. These creatures have been around for, I mean, a long time.
And one thing I would say is this is dependent on where you're at regionally, right? And this is the joy of like a GoPro or a submersible camera. You would be shocked of like how much the water will clear up 4 feet down.
Yeah, yeah.
And so check that stuff out. GoPros are a dime a dozen, and these cameras and stuff.
You know, the other thing too is that, you know, a lot of that current is deeper than the surface stuff.
Right.
Like when there's actually like current. Yeah, it's very much below the surface.
And even like in a bowl-shaped lake, if it's just runoff from the edges that'll cloud the top of the water, you could get out in the main basin and it's really not dirty.
Exactly.
And so the one thing I can say is this, in chocolate milk, I'm going to slow my presentations down so they can find them a little bit better visually, and I'm not going to do any lazy J's. You know, I'm guilty as charged for like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got to finish. Yeah. You got to finish.
You got to
go all the way.
Real sweet figure eight. Try to bring them up. Make sure you're doing all the stuff so you might see them.
And that's when your side imaging comes into play for sure. On, you know, you can see those fish follow even with crap water, you know.
Absolutely.
Sure.
So the next one up is from Kevin. What is the day in a life of a muskie guide?
Yes.
Oh my God. Well, it's fishing all day long and then doing this podcast. It's 12 o'clock in my house. It's like 11 your time.
Yeah, it's 11.
That's the day in the life of a muskie guy. Chaz, why don't you start on that? What's your day? Okay, let's say this. I'm going to give you an even tighter scenario. It's June. You're busy. You've got trips all week long. What's it like that day between trips? What's a normal day
for you?
I'm
speaking for both of us. I think you definitely get into a really neat rhythm where I find that like normal life, you know, like habits or tendencies, like you just don't really do them very well. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like going to the grocery store gets kind of weird because you're like, you're kind of off the boat. And like you're doing like buying turkey at the deli. You're just kind of like, it's just, everything's odd.
Everything's annoying.
Well, yeah. And it's like, you know, you're my home, my comfort zone. When things get crazy, you know, I am a man of routine and habit.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that, you know, having routines is very important when things get crazy, because you have to have a high caliber of performance. So like, you know, your knots need to be tied a certain way all the time. Your line needs to be checked all the time. You know, everything needs to be, your boat needs to be cleaned. And it's like, so the life of a guide is very interesting because, you know, for me, it's like, you know, there's a lot of little things that go beyond, you know, behind the scenes, like, you know, having a clean boat. Like when my clients get in the boat,
absolutely,
I don't want it full of blood and musky shit from the people,
dude,
from the day
and soda cans and water. You know what?
Do you gotta clean everything. Get a vacuum every night.
I don't want to embarrass you, but I'm going to divulge something about both of us.
Yeah.
To that question, me and Chaz are both very OCD and both have massive anxiety.
Yeah, right.
We're both. Am I correct? We're both on blood pressure meds. We're both have anxiety from hell. We're both worriers. You and I thrive.
Probably
in that.
Why we get along so well. Right, honestly,
but we're both insane. But when you have only that one thing to focus on, you function really well.
You do. Yeah, absolutely.
It's just like, I can't think about, oh, wow, I feel funny. You can't think about anything else. You can't think about, oh, you know, is this the trajectory my life should be on? You know, you can't think about that stuff. So I think to be a successful muskie guy, you have to be a little bit nuts because you're fixated in that world. But the shit that nobody sees is like that is like, okay.
Well, let me just give a typical, like, you know, so when I wake, so let's say a typical, I'm just going to have a I'm going to meet my clients at six. I'm going to try to like give a real, I'll give 2 minutes here.
Right.
I'm going to meet my clients at 6 a.m. at the bait shop, Joke and Joe's, Three Lakes, Wisconsin.
Right.
6 a.m. meetup. I always wake up an hour before and at least an hour before I have to meet my clients. Yeah. That is the bare minimum for me. Battery chargers are on the night before, the boat's ready to go, and the knots have all been, you know, everything's
ready to be done.
So I get up at 5 a.m., do a quick face wash, and coffee up like a mofo. You don't believe how much coffee
and
I drink.
And you wonder why we have anxiety, folks, because we're just jacked up through the roof.
I'm jacked up on coffee, and so I make a quick breakfast. I'm coffeeing. I come back up, do my thing. I pull the boat out, and then I come back into the house, make sure everything, just without giving any details, I'm ready to go for the day, and then you're off. You meet people, and they're new people, and it's amazing. And I think that there's a lot of things once the day begins that you know, is it's difficult to put into words because, like, it's easy if you do it once, and let's say you get a really tough rainstorm early June, and it's like it's 63 degrees air temp, and you're in a 10-hour rain.
Yeah.
And you do that for 5 days in a row.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's part of the grind of it that it also attracts me too, because it's like it is tough.
It's tough.
But, you know, and then I guess I'll say this. Two last things, because I'm going to get on a tangent here.
Yeah.
You're letting me talk way too long.
I love it.
Is my mindset when I meet clients, and I probably speak for both of us, is this. And this is a lot of my thought is when I see a new group of people, my goal is to make the best memory of their summer experience that they will remember.
Yeah.
Like when they hop into my Jeep or they hop into my boat, like I want that to be the best thing that they say that they had in 2020. Okay. Now bar all that, we caught a nice fish, blah, blah, blah. So I drop them off and I come home.
And it's not done. You're not done.
Well, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
And you're generally speaking exhausted. So I will in the morning, I'll put out like, there's two things I usually eat during the season. It's either a frozen pizza or chicken,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of funny. But the chicken's easy because what I do is I freeze them all in small Ziploc bags. And in the mornings, if I'm going to do chicken and actually be decently healthy, I'll throw that in the fridge, thaw it out. When I come home from guiding, it's ready to eat, throw it on the grill, have a Pepsi. And then I go back to the garage, have a Pepsi or two, work on the boat.
Clean it. Yeah.
You sit there, you smell the gasoline, you smell the exhaust. The old E-Tech just kind of ekes exhaust out. It's a good smell.
Right.
And you're just there. And then you go and you get to bed. But when shit gets really crazy, you know, I'm in bed at like 10:30 after your, because a lot of nights you're out with clients for dinner.
Yeah.
And clients want to treat you because they love it, right? Like they've had a good time. Regardless if you cut a muskie, they want to take you to dinner and they'll buy you a beer or something. You come home after dinner with clients, it's like 10:30. You're meeting those same clients on a multi-trip deal at 6 or 5:30. So you're getting 4.5 hours of sleep. Yep. You get up, you pound the coffee, you do it again. And then you go back to bed at again, 10:30, 11, and you do it again. And then you repeat that for 30 days.
Oh, I told you, like when we were talking crazy before the podcast, my longest streak was 90 straight.
That's insane.
And what people don't realize is this is like, I tell all my clients, I say this, I said, it is not about the fishing. It is about entertaining. People don't realize that about guiding is like, you have to be personable and you have to get along with anybody.
Dude, you have to be able to entertain.
You can't just be like, I'm a great muskie fisherman. Let's go out on my boat and stand there in silence.
So many different people from so many different walks of life.
Right. So you can have 8 hours, you're entertaining.
You can have, you know, factory workers. You can have
anybody,
plumbers and carpenters and teachers. And you mean, you get everybody.
God, this question, he opened the can of worms on this one, but it's, dude, that's the thing is like, my wife always says, like, a 10-hour trip is a 14-hour day.
I would say 16-hour days.
Because, I mean, I've got help at the house because I wake up. If I've got to be there, a lot of times when it's hot out, I'll start in the midday and go, like, till 30, 40 minutes after dark. But it's like,
that's what I do early season.
Yeah, and you get up. And you eat food and you run out of the house in a panic to either pick them up or meet them there. And then you're on the boat with people for 8 to 10 hours. And then you come home and you clean the boat and you cut all the line you use that day off. You retire.
You got to clean the damn boat.
And me and you were talking about before we started the podcast, we're talking about trolling motors. So if something breaks, guess what you got to do that night?
Oh my God. Yeah.
I was up. I've literally gone out on an hour and a half of sleep because it was like, the fuel pump on your engine broke. So when you come home, there's no like, we can't go tomorrow. It's, I have to do this no matter what. It's almost like being on call when you're doing that. And it's awesome. I mean,
it is amazing. You and I can bitch about it. But it's fun. But there is a certain, obviously you and I wouldn't be doing it anymore if it drove us that
you
crazy.
And I know you well enough that you and I find a certain peace in it because it's so occupying that you can't think.
Oh my God. I love that you said that there's a certain peacefulness in it.
Right.
There is like the actual art of guiding is peaceful in many ways. Like when I'm in the garage at night and it's just literally me and the buzz of the battery chargers and I'm sipping on a Pepsi and I'm just there.
Yeah.
And I'm exhausted and I'm just done. I'm not even going to eat any dinner cause I'm so tired or something. It's surreal and it's such a short period of time in life that you can do it.
Oh, there's no, you can't do it.
But I want to throw another one out there for me. Here's another scenario, folks, a life of a guide. I got the back to back half days, which I do quite a bit. And I have a little bit of an interesting, cause I'm trying to keep my body. So, you know, like Steven, I said, we're both on, you know, blood pressure shit. We're both trying to stop, you know,
both of us are psychotic is the problem.
And
yeah.
All this shit, you know, we're slowing down to the Pepsis, but we try to at least, but on my half days, I usually guide, you know, the 6 to 11, so that's 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So the 6 to 11 shift, which I'm meeting clients at 5:30. So if I'm fishing 6 to 11, which is actually we're on the water from 6 a.m. to 11 a.m., I have a 5-hour half day. I'm meeting them at 5:30. We fish till 11. I drop them off. I get home by 12:30, and then I pick up my next batch of clients at 4. So I have a neat little window where here's what I usually do. I park the boat in the garage. I check my equipment, which usually on those half days, if I'm fishing muskies and I haven't had something outrageous happen with a backlash,
right?
I don't really change much. Usually for the day it's done.
Right.
And then I will go on a run. I go run 2 miles and I completely clear my head. I take a shower and I hop in bed. And this is actually my routine, which I've never told anybody before.
I love it.
So I know. So I guide from 6 to 11. I come home. I throw the boat in the garage, eat lunch on the patio. You know, I sit out there in the sun or the rain or whatever it is and hop in the, you know, run 2 miles, whatever it is. Yeah, I run 2 miles, I hop in the shower, and I sleep for 30 minutes. I take, like, the most power amazing nap. Oh, it's the most those days when I'm, like, in my groove, those 30-minute naps are the best things of my life.
Dude, it's because up there it's a little bit different where you can, like, just pull out of the lake and be at your place. It's, oh, I've not even told you, I have this windshield thing of, it looks like the Millennium Falcon. If you ever see that in the front of my Jeep, I'm in there passed out.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, man.
I'll literally just, like, put the boat on the trailer and go to the boat ramp and just take a power nap and then go out on the next trip. So, man, we got to move on because me and you could just sit here.
I know. We could talk about this. I actually, like, thought this was just a day in the life.
I love it. The thing is this, is like, we could do an entire podcast, but the thing is this, it's not as sexy as you think it is, and it is, like, physically, it will kick your ass. It will.
Yeah.
If you think a week in Canada's tough, give her 60 days straight and then call me. Next one up is from Jason. Jason says, thanks, guys. It's always a pleasure to listen to you guys every week. Here's to hoping the Canadian border opens up before July. Well, hopefully it does. His question is this. I'm in the process of shopping for a new fish and ski boat for my young family. I'm looking for a used boat. Max is $25,000. I'm looking at a Ranger 1850, a Crestliner Sportfish, and a Lund Fish and Ski. Any advice on this can of worms? I live in the Pacific Northwest and will have to travel to pick up the boat. Okay, so Pacific Northwest.
What are the different models?
Yeah, so he's got that Ranger 1850, a Crestliner Sportfish, and a Lund Fish and Ski. So he needs a family boat. So the mom is going, we want to take the kids out and see the sunset. And this guy, he's wanting to catch some tigers too.
Estimate, and I could be totally wrong in this, the Crestliner is going to be probably the least in price out of those three options. And
bro,
then
we were talking,
Lund might be comparable.
We were talking boats before this. Before we even start recording. But go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah, this is a great question.
No, you go. I was just going to say the Ranger and the Lund are probably, like, comparable in price, but could be vastly different in the type of boat.
Here's my deal. If you're in the Pacific Northwest, I've fished up there. I've fished Washington. I've fished Oregon. And you got tigers up there. Here's the deal, like, the style of boats that are up there, the Ranger 1850, you know, Jason knows what I'm talking about. A lot of those boats are not the typical musky boats. Dude, those reservoirs are not that dissimilar from the South. I would just go with a whether it be the Crestliner, the Guru just bought an Alumacraft that was pretty...
Yeah, his boat's fantastic.
It's a great boat. Look at the Alumacraft, which is the, I want to say it's a 17-foot side console. There's a lot of boats sub $25,000 that would function as a family boat / musky boat.
Absolutely.
I'm betting if you're looking at Ranger 1850, that's a used boat. For $25K, you can get a brand new boat with a warranty on the engine and a warranty on the boat. From I'm assuming Crestliner, Alumacraft. I run Tracker. I'm down here in the South. There's not a Lund deal. The closest Lund dealership to me is in Illinois. They don't sell Lund down here. It's not a thing. Like, you know, when you're driving up through Wisconsin and you drive through the UP and all that stuff, what do you see every 10 feet, Chaz? You see a Lund. It doesn't exist here. So Lund is a hair more expensive than Tracker. So I would look at Alumacraft, Tracker, Crestliner would be a good one. Lowe, our wonderful sponsor, Premier Power Sports, deals with Lowe, and they sell some really good, like, family style fish ski boats. That's what I would look at, because you can actually come in sub budget if you go with an aluminum boat. That's, you know, you can find four seaters with enough horsepower to pull the kids around on a tube, and then it's still a functional musky boat.
Absolutely, man.
Because, like, dude, Chaz, you run a Ranger.
Yes.
My dad ran Ranger for years. When you start talking Rangers, and if you start talking a used Ranger, and you start talking repairs on a used Ranger, the bucks can stack up quick.
Yes, I agree. Well, just generally speaking, yeah. I mean, you could a used Ranger could very much be more than $25,000
easily. There's so many. What I call them tin can boats. I run a 17-foot boat. I fish a crap ton of people off of it. Go with something like that and keep the money down. You can come in under budget and be functional on both fronts. You know, it's a weird, if you're in the Pacific Northwest, obviously you're going to have to travel to find a boat that's going to be functional as a Tiger Muskie boat. Call Brian at Premier Power Sports. I'm not kidding, because that's not that horrible of a drive, and they could have it sent in transit for you. I like the low. Yeah, actually, I was trying to talk the guru into one of the low fish and ski boats, which is a cool boat because it's a side console. I think it was a 16.5 or a 17, and it was in the low $20,000 range. That would be a really good musky boat that's going to be stable on those reservoirs. But that's what I'd look at. If you've got the budget for $25K, buy a inexpensive new boat opposed to an expensive used boat. Does that make sense, Chaz?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Cool. We'll go ahead and move on to the next one. Is John. John says, to the master of bait modification and the wizard of all things half spooled, toting his staff forge of empty Pepsi cans. Oh my goodness. What is your recommendation or opinion on incorporating standard long shank hooks when modifying baits? Apparently. I'm the wizard. Chaz, can I tell you a dirty secret?
Sure.
I missed a fish because my reel was half spooled this week.
No. Why?
Because listeners.
You couldn't pick up the slack.
They've been listening all winter long. When it gets warmer, and we're talking, you're going to see it in Wisconsin before too long, 60 plus degree, that's when I don't half spool. I go full spool. I was right there on the border. And if I had a little bit more gusto, I could have nailed this SOB. I didn't have enough speed. So when we get in these warmer months, I'm not completely half spooled. I might be three quarters spooled. But anyway.
Three quarters spool.
He said, John says, I'm currently setting on a collection of 1/0, 3/0, and 5/0 trebles and would like to make an effective use of them. I mostly run the full gamut of JBO baits, which I understand modifying best using short shank hooks. What worst case scenario maybe that I can use from you Muskie 360 guys on bucktails? Basically, I'm going to paraphrase. He's like, what can I can do with these hooks?
Wow.
1/0, 3/0, and 5/0 treble hooks. 5/0, put them on your 9-inch shallow raiders. One thing I do with those baits, those things are super buoyant. I like a heavier 5/0 treble on those. I'll add a bell sinker on the front, do all that stuff to get, like, if you got a couple of them, get one that's running deeper, get one that runs shallow and play with that. But, you know, as far as that modification, if you got ones and threes, threes are what we run on our shallow raiders, right?
I was going to say, I put the fives, 5/0s, I love to run on 500 series booger tails.
Yes.
Fives and sixes, love those on the 500s. One and threes, like, you know, I believe the baby shallow raider comes standard with a one, but uh-huh. You could... to make it a super suspending or maybe even a sink, yeah, more so suspending or sinking, you can throw twos, but obviously if you've got threes, you can throw the 3/0s on a baby shallow raider or even a 7-inch shallow raider. And you're totally going to like you were saying, Steven, you can neutralize that buoyancy.
Yeah. And he's saying, you know, these are the standard long shanks. So if you got those 3/0s standard long shank, throw them on a 5-inch shallow raider. I actually run my favorite depth raider is the fluorescent perch. You know what I'm talking about? That neon green.
Yeah.
I run two long shank 3/0s on that thing. So play with it, dude. Like, take your JBO baits or whatever baits you got out and take your split ring pliers on the boat and go, if I put 5/0s on this, it looks cool. That's what you got to do. That's the way we figure this stuff
out. And try them on the JB Rattler.
Anything. I
mean, and you can take those. Did he say they're all long shank?
Yeah, he said that he's sitting on a stockpile standard long shank hook. So,
you know, I don't want to say go. My last thing I'll say before we move on to the next question is, I think five is a little shy on this size, but on your top raiders, long shank would be great for that back treble hook, shrink wrapped. I usually go with a 6 or a 7, but I'm just saying, if you're sitting on a stockpile, you could throw a long shank five on the back of a top raider or another top water lure.
I run fives on my dancing raiders.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. So that's a great hook size to throw on a top water too.
And just play with them. Take your baits out and take your split ring pliers out there and play with them. And you go, that looks cool or that doesn't. That's how we do all this. On the water experimentation. Next up is from Max. He said, I live on the Minocqua chain and was wondering if muskie fishing can still be good even when crazy amounts of recreational boat traffic are happening during the summer. Would it be a waste?
Yeah.
Would it be a waste of time to go fishing in the morning or evenings when boat traffic is lighter? Or would I still have a good chance of catching fish during the early evening and evening parts? Buddy, this is right there in your wheelhouse. What do you do for the boat traffic?
I mean, like, Minocqua is, like, literally not – I mean, I fish Minocqua area myself, and I got to say – the boat traffic is definitely, you know, a challenge at times peak season. There's no getting around it as a guide or an angler in general. I don't care if you're guiding or whatnot. You gotta fight the boat traffic. So obviously fishing early and fishing late are key times.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt about that. So fishing early will be helpful. Fishing late will be helpful. Is that a good time to be out? Absolutely. Yes. I would say evening times, after the skiers go in. So generally speaking, it's kind of funny. The skiers get pretty crazy, like usually between like 5 and like 7 p.m., like right before dinner, there'll be like a big run of skiing and then they're done. And that's when things like it's between like 7 and like 9:30. That's when, like, before you get like that real dark, that's when shit, like, I shouldn't say that on the podcast, but that's when stuff gets really quiet and you can get at your spots and do it, you know, without problems. Really, I would recommend, especially in the Minocqua area with clearer waters, I'm assuming that you're facing there in the Minocqua chain, night fishing is a pretty incredible option. If you got the guts, I'll say, to be out there at night. It's, I don't say guts, but you know, a lot of people really don't fish at night.
It's weird
as much as it's written about and talked about, really nobody does it. I mean, I've been fishing at night for a long time and nobody's ever out there. Fishing at night is an incredible thing to do in northern Wisconsin, and you gotta read, Steven, it's time for I'm gonna actually pull up the exact chapter right now.
It's a crankbait secrets.
You know what book I'm actually looking at?
The Lofty Tone.
Can you still hear me? I'm actually going to pull up. Here it is. Oh my God.
Read
chapter
it.
Chapter 19.
Yes, sir.
Page 197. Night cranking. This is actually this might be kind of fun to read on the podcast.
Lay it on me.
This is actually amazing.
Oh, it lines up with his question almost perfectly. I know I've read that about 30 billion times.
This is the best chapter. Here we go. Ready? During my single best nighttime muskie outing, we boated 11 muskies with the top fish at 50 and a half inches. How about my best week? ? We landed 29 muskies in 5 days. Remember that old advertisement we would brag 31 muskies in 31 days? A record still unbroken? Yeah, right. Joe's really like laying it on here.
Yeah.
How does 54 muskies in 14 days sound? All these muskies were taken on one lure or two. I assume, a depth rater here, and they're all taken at night. So there you go. Night fishing, and that's obviously Joe Bucher, Hall of Fame angler who made his reputation as a night fishing guide in Wisconsin.
Yep.
So and that, and by the way, Joe, and just this is probably, yeah, I just kind of gleaned this off of, you know, fishing with Joe all these years, and as you have, Stephen, Joe said, as come July 4th in Wisconsin, only fish at night when he guided. There were only night fishing trips from July 4th to Labor Day weekend. That was it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a no-brainer.
I'm a tangent guy tonight.
No,
I'm tangenting like
buddy,
crazy.
Lay it on me. I love it. The fact that you broke out the Holy Bible of musky fishing there. And
page 197, we actually quoted the Bible tonight, man.
But Max, that's a fact. You guys deal with a lot of boat traffic up there. You know, what my only other tip was this, is if you want to shoot somebody off a jet ski, lead them by 12 feet. That's it. That's all you need to do.
Wait,
just give them about
a guru words. Can we have a guru words of wisdom right now?
I think it is time, folks. Is everybody out there ready for a guru words of wisdom?
The guru says, I want to get slimy tonight.
I feel enlightened. What about you, Chaz? Do you feel?
I needed it so bad, man. I needed one. Really
I needed
bad.
One bad. But yeah, Max, dude, get out there at night. Just be safe about it.
Well,
but
yeah,
I mean,
but
dude,
well, yeah, you have to know your water well. Like, you have to know your water well to fish it. And how well do you need to know it? Let me just give you a quick example. It's not know it by like, I know it by looking at my GPS on my sonar.
Yeah.
You have to be able to drive at night and look at the tree lines and know where you are by looking at the tree lines on a moonless night. I know that might sound intense, but it's kind of truthful. Because when you're out there, like, I'm confident driving on certain, you know, whatever bodies of water at night, you just look at the tree lines, you know where you are. It's not very complicated. Once you spend enough time in a water,
you got to know. Anyway. Like, you got to know it like you're like, you know, your own house. Next one up is from Ty. Ty says, I live in Madison, Wisconsin, and fish the Yara chain. Is that I might be saying that correctly. And he says,
I've never heard of that.
He says,
I might be a dummy, but
Y-A-H-A-R-A. Yara.
No,
sure.
No, not talked about very often.
Whatever. It'll work for me. So he lives in Madison, fishes the Yara chain almost exclusively. He says, as we transition hopefully into warmer days and warmer water in the coming weeks and months, is it best to wait for the water to heat up throughout the day? I imagine at some point in the summer, it's maybe best to actually get out there before sunrise. What is your plan for timing and thoughts around time of day paired with this time of year? So what should he be doing to this early season during the next few weeks as far as his timing and when he's getting out in the water, Chaz? What do you think?
I say go from noon till 5 p.m.
Yep.
I say wait for that water to warm up in Wisconsin. But again, I mean, here's – I guess I'll say this, man. If you got all day and you got like a 14, 15-hour spread, you know, just if you got time – just go out there all day.
Yeah.
If you're working and you've only got like X amount of time, then that's your hours to fish. I would say like your probably peak hours of solar influence would be, you know, between like, you know, noon and five or something like that. But shit, man, like I'd go out all day if I could.
If
like,
you can't, I mean, if you, dude, in the spring though, like when it's early, I don't waste any time in the mornings. I mean, mm-hmm. You can catch some fish. Don't get me wrong. If you got to pick, like if he's got to pick like a certain time throughout the day.
Afternoon.
Yeah.
Late,
afternoon through the evening. I mean, just focus on that. And then once you get to the point where it's like 60 overnight, like if it's consistently like 60 degrees on your overnight temp, then it's all bets are off and it could be all day long. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's my thought. We'll go ahead and move on. Eric, he said, I pulled in three muskies off the Grass River trolling at 3 to 3.5 miles an hour in 10 to 15 feet of water using lures that are running about 9 feet-ish. He said all of them were caught between 2 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. Temp was a bit lower. They were running 52 degrees. There's no sun. Very windy. I didn't catch anything after this time frame, aside from a couple small walleye. He said, when I'm fishing the shallows, I'm using my trolling motor to cast near the shore. I'm retrieving very slowly, and I'm only catching bass. I'm trying to paraphrase this real quick. What he's getting at is this. He says, why do the muskie seem to be deeper in my area? I'm not catching any casting, but I'm catching them trolling when I'm fishing the shallows. I'm sorry, that is a very long question. He mentions topwater, but basically his surface temps are only 52 degrees right now, and he's catching deep fish. He wants to know why he's not catching them in the shallows with topwaters or fish in the shallows with other baits. What do you think? 52 degrees water right outside of the St. Lawrence, Chaz.
I just wanted to yell out, like,
they ain't shallow yet.
Well, yeah, and like, this is a great scenario. Like, you're catching muskies, and I am happy because you're catching muskies, and you found a pattern. You banged three, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Trolling, you've got them locked in on a speed and a depth, and they're obviously not shallow because you're getting them at a consistent depth, and you could catch that depth too with topwaters if you wanted to.
I mean, that's a thing. If you're banging them at those depths, and it's only 52, I'm not surprised they're not shallow.
Exactly. That's still deep.
Give it some time. Give it 2 or 3 weeks. And if you see, you know, 61, 65, yeah, those shallows are going to come into play. But what it is, I think you've got some wishful thinking on right now as far as where those fish are located. Give it some time. Yeah, it's a little early. If I were you, I wouldn't even waste a second on anything else other than trolling through there at 9 to 10 feet.
I would eat that trolling thing up, man, until they stop biting. Until they stop biting deep, then move shallow and start experimenting with other stuff.
Absolutely. But,
holy cow, if I was on a bite where they're just, I'm clobbering them, I'm going to see. I'm going to keep doing it.
I don't care how I catch them.
exactly.
Anyway, we've got another one up from Rick. He says, what are some pro pointers for figure eights? Thanks, guys. Oh, love the podcast. What are your
pro pointers? This isn't pro pointers podcast, is it?
No, this is idiots talking muskies.
This is amateur pointers.
This is amateur hour.
Wait, okay. So the question is,
what are your
figure eights?
We'll forward your questions to some professionals. What are your pro pointers for figure eights, Chaz?
Okay, should I start this one off first?
Go for it, man. I don't care.
Okay,
I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm just guessing.
Same. So I would say that generally speaking, the rod, common issue that I see guiding is not getting the rod tip into the water early enough. You got to guide that lure, whatever it is.
You got to anticipate.
Yeah, that's the word I was thinking of. Thank you. We're really complimenting each other well tonight.
Absolutely.
Anticipate that lure coming. I don't care if it's a deep diver or if it's top water. You got to anticipate and whatever it is, rod tips in the water well before the lure approaches the boat. And I think the biggest thing that I try to coach on is, I mean, obviously speed is important, but moving, transitioning from the cast, the actual retrieve into the figure eight, making that smooth. It's tough to describe on air here, but the smoothness of the transition is very important. The ability to transition the retrieve, like the way you're holding your rod during the retrieve into the way that
body
you hold
language.
The rod into the figure eight, like that transfer of the rod into a different position is so critical. If it's choppy, you literally could lose your chance at a fish easily on pressured water. If you mess that up and you like,
they're out of there.
Yeah. You pause it. You do this and that, you hesitate, you're done. It's over.
I preach to people all the time is anticipate that lure's arrival and have your body language set up correctly. You can't be sitting here like two steps off the gunwale of the boat, not ready. You have to have your toes against the edge, have your shoulder, whatever your lead shoulder is, that whatever your rod is, I hold it in my right hand. So my right shoulder is forward, and I'm anticipating that bait showing up, and my rod's ready to go in that figure eight long before that bait arrives.
Exactly, exactly. And that's
the biggest thing, dude. The rest
and
of
then
it
from
is,
there. Yeah. I would say, you know, a common issue again, guiding, you know, here's what day in the life of a guide.
Yeah.
We're coming back into it here. Common issue on my boat is figure eights that are just way too shallow. A lot of folks, and this is okay, because a lot of folks that are getting, if you're new to the sport of muskie fishing and you're, hey, welcome to Muskie 360. If you're new to muskie fishing, hey, Steven and I are so pumped you're here, and Tyler and Joe and everybody else. Hey, a lot of folks want to see their lure to give them confidence of what's happening when they're figure eighting, right? They do it right under the surface. They can see their lure moving. You know, the closer you are to the surface, the harder it would be to get a muskie to actually bite.
Yeah.
So FYI, you got to go deep. You got to get your lure down under the surface. You can't see it half the time, but you know, you can bring it back up and check it and then go back down. So depth control, depth change, speed change, and you got to make those figure eights really wide.
Make it as wide as you can. The one thing I'll tell you is this, is don't, when you first come into the figure eight, don't slow down from what you're reeling at.
Mm-hmm,
the
mm-hmm.
thing that I see all the time with clients is like, we'll see the fish, it's 10 feet off the boat, they transition into the figure eight, and they slow down because they want to look at the fish.
Go somewhat faster.
Either go the same speed. Yeah, kiss of death. And that is the one that kills.
Even if you and I, okay, so here's the scenario, folks.
Yeah.
You're in the forest and you're getting chased by a bear. The last thing you're going to do is slow the F down.
It's not natural. A bait fish is going to speed up. Yeah,
exactly. If you're getting chased by a big muskie, the last thing you're going to do is slow down. You've got to at least keep the momentum, keep the speed.
You
got to
speed up. The other thing I'd say is knowing, and you got to practice this, and I'm saying practice it when you know there's no fish around. Just stand there and practice how to stall that bait slightly on your turns, on your outside corners. If you can sort of give that thing a smidgen of hang time in those corners, you're going to catch some more muskies.
Well, I'm going to compliment Steven on this one, guys. He's absolutely right on this big time, because you think about this. Slowing down on the turns is huge, because you think about a big muskie, they can't turn.
They
got to
have room.
They got to have room. They can't turn as quickly as a 36 or a, you know, a 30 incher. Well, you get a big fish,
mm-hmm.
you know, man, you got to give them some room.
Absolutely.
And you got to slow it down for them.
The other thing I'll say is this, is I've been doing circles since I was 10 years old.
On paper? Is that the only thing you could draw?
That's the only thing you could draw. Two giant boobs.
Steven, what the hell is this shit? Yeah.
What is this? Just two big circles. I mix up my figure eights with circles. And so my other tip would be this. If you bring him in and you do an eight and he doesn't hit, make the next one a circle. And just keep mixing it between circles and eights. And you'll be shocked of how many fish you'll catch on big, wide, loping circles or ovals.
Yeah, so, and circles can be really good on big fish and like
slow moving fish.
And it's also just a change up to what everybody else is doing on a particular body of water. So, mm-hmm. You know, we're talking monocle muskies and pressured waters. Do a circle. It sounds dumb, but
it works.
Everybody does figure eights.
Do you know,
do a circle.
I'll
you know, mix
you,
it up.
God,
mix it up.
Not to keep dragging it out, but do you know one thing I do all the time? Is being a lefty, if I'm standing there in the nose of the boat, me and you were talking about fishing out of the front of the boat earlier, right?
Yeah, yes.
My first thing is I'm bringing him from left to right every time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I will actually bring that fish by my feet out and around the trolling motor, do a loop there before I bring him into the circle or a figure eight. I can't tell how many fish I've caught taking them in front of the trolling motor, just that slight turn there, and then bringing them back. So don't be afraid. Like, if you've got hot fish and you've got fish to play with, figure out what will get them going. I've caught them on my boat where we walk them around the boat instead of doing other stuff on big fish. So, you know, you've got to play with a little bit. And the thing I always tell my clients, and I know Chaz would agree with, is when it comes to what you're doing in the figure eight, it's an instantaneous decision. And you've got to mess up a bunch of them before you know what to do.
Oh my God.
You just have to.
Probably. Yes. That's like so true.
You've got to pooch hundreds of these things until you get to the point you go, I've seen that 70 times and I know what he wants. You've got to be able to read that fall. You're a Tony Rizzo guy. Rizzo used to talk about reading those follows all the time. And you've got to see these fish enough coming in and go, that fish is way behind the bait. That fish is hot and he's going to smoke it. That fish needs a little bit. I need to gear that fish up a bit.
But you know, and what most folks though, and it's funny because even when I'm fishing with certain buddies that don't, you know, some of my buddies that don't fish as often, you know, you and I, like, they get very quickly mesmerized when they see a, which is okay, and it's common, right? If you're new to muskie fishing, you see one and you instantly get kind of like nervous, and like, and believe me, like I still get nervous, but you go through,
it's controlled.
It's a control, like the body does what it does, but your nerves are doing something else.
Yeah.
But you have to, you know, still manipulate the bait in a particular way that's going to catch that fish. Like, I don't know, I'm probably going off task here, but like, you know, you can't get mesmerized with the actual fish. You've got to make the movements to, you're hunting. You are hunting. You are not looking. You're trying to catch this fish. You've got to hunt that. You've got to make a move. You cannot sit there and look at that thing.
I'll be honest, because behind sunglasses, nobody knows the difference. I shut my eyes on topwater fish and figure eight fish all the time. I don't care what the fish is doing. A lot of times, like I caught a monster on Dancing Raider, was it 2-3 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
And that thing swarped at it the first time and missed it. And I just shut my eyes. It's just like the same thing of like, if I've got to look at him, I've seen thousands of muskies. Who cares about looking at another one? I'll shut my eyes.
They hit it. Yeah, exactly. Hey.
And so if you're having trouble with the nerves, or you're having trouble with like doing the right thing, shut your eyes. I know it sounds stupid, but once he hits it, do it. I've done that before.
It's a great. There's another tip. Another alternative.
It might work for you. Yeah, and because
it might work. It works for me
on topwater. That's the thing. It keeps me from getting too freaked out. Anyway, the last one for this week's episode, and keep sending your questions, guys. We love it. Is from Martin. Martin says, what are some good lure pairings for me and my son to throw? I've seen a bunch of times of people throwing topwaters like top raiders and booker tails as a combo. What are some other combos of other bait styles?
Ooh, that's a cool one. That's a cool one. I guess I'll start off by saying, you know, the top raider booker tail combo is
classic.
Just a classic, obviously. I would say, you know, one thing that we do quite a bit is some kind of minnow bait, like say a 7-inch shallow raider, and a depth raider. So we've got somebody throwing, you know, parallel casting to an edge or to a, it could be a rock structure too, but you've got somebody, the lead caster is usually throwing deeper. They're throwing a deep diver. So for me, that might be a baby depth raider. So I'm throwing a baby depth raider off the front, and I'd have my buddy, you know, could be Mike Richardson, could be Stephen Paul, throwing a baby shallow raider or a 7-inch shallow raider, more perpendicular, like more, you know, throwing toward the shoreline or something. So there's an option, deep diver off the bow and more, something more shallow, and we're both throwing crankbaits.
One thing that really pops in my head is gliders and rattle traps though, in cold fronts and high bright sun. I mean,
wow,
it's
dude, there you go. That's cool.
It's amazing how many, like, how many, as a guide, what I'll do a lot of times, and I if you've been on my boat, and I know a bunch of you have, a lot of times when I'm throwing, it'll be like not the best scenario for me to hook up, where I'll put on a glide raider, or I'll put on a 10-inch phantom, or I'll put on like this really big glide bait and work it like begrudgingly slow while the client's throwing a JB Rattler in my wake. And it's amazing how many times these fish, they're not going to hit the glide bait, but you can get them moving enough to get them to hit a JB Rattler.
And absolutely.
That's one thing I've seen. Another combo, man, I'll tell you, and this is like a Canadian thing for reefs, is suecks and bulldogs. Or a suic and a bird or a leviathan or whatever, like a dive and rise and a rubber bait. Whether it be a Dusa or a bulldog, those are interesting combos. But also, too, man, you're talking about if we're doing like springtime or come the season opener, I'm immediately thinking one dude's throwing a JB Rattler, another guy's throwing a shallow raider.
Yep. Or another one for me would be a swim jig and a slot master. We're fishing super shallow.
Yeah.
Slot master for me is always a go-to, and a swim jig is really that like hybrid. Is it a bass lure? Is it a musky lure? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's a hybrid, and muskies will eat that, and that's a great way to stay versatile throwing that swim jig out there too.
Yeah, and you got it aside. I think the biggest thing for me is from being guides. Sometimes our job, me and Chaz's job, is locating fish, not catching fish. So you guys have got to decide on your boat. You go, are we both trying to catch one right now, or are we trying to move and then catch one? So you could switch it up and work in tandem where the lead angler is trying to move the fish and the rear angler is trying to catch one, and then that role reverses later in the day after you get your first one in the boat, if you're able to do that. Dude, another thing I do all the time is like double 10s followed by a 500 series. That's an amazing.
Interesting.
I mean, sometimes if we're in tough conditions where we've got shock and awe to get attention and a small bait to get the bite.
Yeah.
And it might not be, we might be shortchanging Martin here with like not the best answer, but that's where my head's right now.
I think we've thrown a number of good options out there, honestly. There's so many different two person combinations out there you can go with.
Yeah.
And honestly, you know, the first one we talked about, the top raider, Bookertail, whatever it is, topwater bucktail. I mean, that is a classic that never gets old. And if you've got the right conditions, go for it.
Absolutely. Or mix it up. One guy's throwing a double blade, another guy's throwing a single, or somebody's throwing 10s and somebody's throwing 8s, or somebody's throwing 7s and 5s. You can do that. You don't have to get that crazy about it.
And Steven, I think everything we're hitting at here, and this is like, I would say possibly the bottom line of the question for Martin, is differentiate regardless of what you're doing. You're not, I'm going to try to say this once more for everybody. You are not throwing the same lure as your partner. You're always trying to differentiate a little bit. You're always trying to, you know, complement in a different way, because all of these fish, they're all, you know, programmed a little bit differently, and they react to different lures. So you could go through there and you and I've seen this a bazillion times. You could go through there and throw the 500 Goldilocks, which is just like, muskies kill that thing, but you see nothing. And all of a sudden your buddy behind you is throwing the top raider and a muskie clobbers it. And you say to yourself, this muskie was so smoking hot. How did it not hit the top? How did it not hit the 500 Goldilocks? And it smoked a top raider. Well, guess what? That muskie just didn't give a crap about the 500 Goldilocks. Yeah. It wanted to eat a top raider.
Yep.
And so you have to remember that these fish are just kind of like on a certain day or whatever it is, you know, you have to differentiate for that very reason, that there's certain muskies out there that just don't want certain baits on a certain day, so you have to throw a variety out there. And so that's getting back to the question, I guess.
Absolutely. So, well, Chaz, we have answered a absolutely S ton of questions here.
A Pepsi load of questions.
One thing I want to tell you guys, we appreciate, we've got a ton of emails from you guys that want to fish with me and Chaz. Chaz, and I'm springing on him, but once all this weirdness with the pandemic stuff's over, we will make some plans for hopefully this fall.
That's what I was thinking too, man. Once this stuff calms down, we're going to be in the go.
Yeah, we will come up there and film and hang out with a couple users. We appreciate all the offers. Keep sending them in. If you guys want to fish with me and Chaz, we're going to do the Muskie 360 road trip, hopefully this fall, if things allow it. And we'll do that stuff for the app. Listen, here's the deal. I can't think of a decent, you got an idea for a cool contest for a free bait this week, Chaz?
Ooh, man. I would say, yeah, how about, you know, folks out there with GoPros or you know, any type of videotaping, equipment, coolest live shot of a muskie this week. I don't know, freeze frame, you know, kind of a, I mean, I love that kind of stuff. As I'm reviewing my GoPro footage, I always, you know, pause at a cool spot. So how about this week? Coolest, you know, a slow-mo or freeze frame of a muskie.
How about this coolest pick?
Yeah, yeah.
Coolest pick. Submit them to the user section of the app or send them in. We'll figure it out. We love giving away baits. We'll give away a junior's inline this week. And like I said, it, you know, these sponsors are so cool. They're able to get you guys some baits. We'll come up with a way better idea next week because we're probably – half three sheets to the wind and just grasping at straws right now. But like, if you guys want to fish with me and Chaz, keep sending that stuff in. We'll try to plan a little weekend road trip for this fall. Guys, we appreciate all the support. Tell your friends, and that should be the next contest. We need to do something where somebody's promoting the app or whatever. Also, the last thing I want to know is this. If you guys, and I'm, here's the deal. We're not going to make a freaking cent off of it because I already looked at it. If you guys are interested in any Muskie 360 merch, like t-shirts or hoodies or anything like that, let us know, because here's the deal. There's a company that'll make it and ship it for us. We literally will make almost basically like 50 cents per unit, which is nothing for what it costs to run the app. But if you guys want Muskie 360 merch, sort of let us know, because that'll let us know if we need a design or not. If you guys would rep the app.
I hope so. That'd be really fun to start designing.
Yeah. So we've got some stuff in the works and stuff, and we'll talk about it next week. But send an email and just say, hey, yeah, I'd rep Muskie 360, or we'd like Muskie 360 clothes or hats or whatever. Or if you guys got ideas, if you want like Muskie 360 underwear, let us know. But we want to do some
that would be funny. We should get the woman's line as well.
Oh yeah, we'd sell one pair.
Come on, four pairs
in triple. All four pairs were triple X.
Hey man,
right up the guru's alley.
For sure.
On that disgusting note, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Oh man, that was
the
awesome.
Muskie 360 podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild. Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and the Muskie Shop.
The Wookiee Guru says,